Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Red Fox Blogger with your host, Kel Fritzy. She's the infidel your imam warned you about, and there's no holding her back as she shares her opinions, insights, information, and outrage discussing the political entity known as Islam. We are at a critical juncture in our history, and if the threat of Islam is not faced up front, right now, then we will lose the freedoms of individuality, civic justice, and autonomy of thought we rightly enjoy, and instead see our values replaced with kinetic and civilizational jihad, Sharia law, and oppression permanently. Don't let the memory of our soldiers, past and present, go in vain. It is up to us to protect the legacy for which they fought so hard. We have an obligation to honor their memory today and for future generations. Join Kel Mondays at 3 p.m. Eastern and Fridays at 7 p.m. Eastern on Blog Talk Radio. But leave your political correctness well away from her phone lines and chat room. And be warned, Kel takes no prisoners.
GoDamnMedia.com.
Changes. We are justified in doing anything we can to survive.
And that we are. And welcome to the Red Fox Blogger, and I'm your host, Kel Fritzy. I have been having quite a week, and that there have been so many issues crossing my desk, I never know where to begin. One issue that I've been experiencing is my internet provider that likes to kick me off my very own, landline. And, I do it the old-fashioned way. I do it on the landline. So if you guys have an issue hearing me, please let me know, and I would appreciate that very much. I think I'm sounding pretty good, though. I think that people can hear me okay, and hey, you know what? You gotta love live radio. But like I say, so many issues, so little time. If I could do a show 24/7, I would, because what I deal with in my everyday life, and this is my everyday life, is that I deal with the issues of Islam, as you know. And I weep some days when I come across the atrocities that they're capable of doing. They're capable of accomplishing. I have decided, ladies and gentlemen, we can get rid of Islam in very easy manner. It is so easy to get rid of Islam. It is so easy, even a child can do it, because I have an idea. I'm going to share that with you. I have a 6.5-minute clip that I'm going to share with you a little later on. But what I want to share with you at this point is that there is a group out there. It's called the Council of Ex-Muslims of Britain. Okay? They wrote a manifesto. They are the non-believers. They're the atheists. They're the apostates. And they're the ex-Muslims. They established this group called Council of Ex-Muslims of Britain to insist that no one be pigeonholed as Muslims with culturally relative rights nor deemed to be represented by regressive Islamic organizations and Muslim community leaders. Amen to that. The atheist part kind of bothers me a little bit because I'm a child of God. But you know what? Hey, anybody and everybody that can join us in battling the scourge, I'm fine with that. I'm fine with that. We were all put on this planet for a reason. So, you know, let's embrace everybody, everybody within humanity that will stand with us and fight this latest crusade. But I have an idea. It is so easy. Now, this group, GEMB, they put forth, as I said, a manifesto. Their preamble continues. Those of us who are able to come forward with our names and photographs and represent countless others who are unable or unwilling to do so because of the threats faced by those considered apostate, which is punishable by death in countries under Islamic law. Well, you know what? It's not only in countries that are under the thumb of Islamic law. It is in countries like yours and mine. Let me reiterate that. Punishable by death in countries under Islamic law? No, it's here on our shores. We have apostates that are honor killed in Canada, in the United States, Australia, and in the UK. But this group got together and they put this manifesto together. And by doing so, they're breaking the taboo that comes with renouncing Islam. But they are also taking a stand for reason, universal rights, and values in secularism. See, it is so simple, very, very simple, to denounce Islam. And in particular, in the West. You know, religion, or the lack thereof, is a private affair. And thus it should be. You know, I've always said that. I've always thought that religion was a meeting between you and your God. I live by my God. I worship Jesus Christ. I'm a Christian. But that is very, very private to me. That is my relationship. My relationship with Jesus Christ and my God is private. It's my business. I don't have to go to a church, although I do, but I don't have to because Jesus walks beside me every single day. And so religion, therefore, in my heart, is a private affair. I pray a lot. Pray for my sick friends. I pray for my husband when he goes off to work in the morning. I pray that he gets there safe and he comes home at the end of the day. These are little private prayers. But this is mine, and it's mine to own. And nobody can take that away from me. But when they start turning my religion into a political entity, then I have an issue. And this is what Islam does. Islam has turned itself into a political entity. We see it all over the map. We see it in our institutions, whether it be this school, the government, or so-called civic fundraisers, you know, like, Ramadan's ended, so now we're going to feed the homeless. Like, come on, that's fucking bullshit. We know it. I'm serious. It is time to recognize Islam is not a religion. It's a god-bloody political entity. It's wrapped up itself in a cloak. It's a cloak. It's the Trojan horse that we are dealing with right now. And I'm sorry. It is the F-bomb show. Ladies and gentlemen, I apologize. But, you know, when you come here on Friday nights, when I'm left to my own devices, I am going to let it kind of get out there. I am not a lady. I'm not polite. I'm blunt. And I'm pissed off every single time I open my email. And I get my blog alerts. And I read about this crap. It just makes me furious. How do we get rid of Islam? It's very, very simple. This manifesto by the Council of Ex-Muslims of Britain is brilliant. We have to insist on a public renunciation. We have to have a declaration. We have to let people understand that we are the majority in the West and that we are humanists and we love life and we have to halt Islam in its stomping steps once and for all. We are at a critical juncture in our history, ladies and gentlemen. Islam is the biggest threat facing the West. Not the shortage of oil, not the lack of electricity, not even minutiae, like paying our mortgage for the month. No. Islam is the biggest threat facing the West right now. And we're losing our children to Islam in our public schools. You listen to shows like Jeff Mitchell's of EDL Radio. He'll tell you. You listen to Tim Burton of Liberty GB. He'll tell you. You listen to the radio host at Radio Jihad Network. All of them will tell you. The global threat is Islam. So I have an idea. I have a big idea. We have to take the lead from Central Council of the ex-Muslims, and they wrote this up in Germany. I am damned if I'm going down with the ship. No way. You know what? Let's start with this one, okay? What about universal rights and equal citizenship for all? What about getting rid of cultural relativism and the tolerance of inhumane beliefs and getting rid of discrimination and abuse in the name of respecting religion or culture? Exactly. I'm opposed to that. Opposed to cultural relativism. I am intolerant of inhumane beliefs. I am intolerant of discrimination. I'm intolerant of abuse. in the name of respect for a religion or a culture? Are you kidding me? No. There you go. One very easy step. You can go to your local politician, or you can go to your church group. You can go to your neighbor and say, hey, I want to talk to you about something. Hey, what do you think about this? We've got something going on here, and I'm being oppressed because I'm a Christian. And these Islamists are telling me that they have every right to oppress me. What do you think about that, Reverend, Pastor, Political Joe? What do you think about that? What do you think the answer will be? Do we dare even suggest we get an honest answer? We won't. Because they don't listen to us. We are down here. We are the foot soldiers. I am so exhausted some days. Writing my local politician, writing my member of parliament. As everybody knows, I reside in Canada, so if I was in the United States, I would be writing my state senator or the person who represents me in the House. But you know what? It's just equally as frustrating up here in Canada, and it is in the United Kingdom. Ask Tim. Ask Jeff. Trying to get answers. What are you going to do when Jihad comes to town? And I'm under siege. That is exactly what is happening right now at this point in our history. This group, the Council of Ex-Muslims of Britain, they want to put a stop to this. They want to recognize that we all enjoy universal rights and equal citizenship. I want to take that bloody United Nations and throw it in the bloody East River, okay? This is how furious I get. I get so angry I shake some days. I get so sick and tired of hearing about honor killings, female genital mutilation, imposition in my public schools in which I pay taxes, whereas the gymnasium is turned into a makeshift mosque for students. I get sick and tired of people coming after those who criticize Islam. And the next thing you know, they have a fatwa on their head, or they are taken to court and sued. I am sick and tired of the human rights tribunal, which the Islamists take full advantage of, like those of Mark Stein, Ezra Levant, and Tim Burton. Enough is enough. It is so easy to stop Islam. We just have to follow so very easy steps. We have to recognize that we do have universal rights. We have to get Islam out of the UN. We have to get rid of 1618. We have the freedom to criticize religion. Of course we do. I criticize religion all the time. I criticize my own sect of Christianity, and that would be my being Anglican. I criticize the Anglican Church all the time because sometimes they do things I don't really care about, and I have issues. But I can criticize Anglican policy. And you know what? Nobody's knocking down my door to want to drag me off and arrest me and imprison me. Not like Islam. Is something very wrong with that, in that you cannot criticize Islam because there is a prohibition. There are restrictions on unconditional freedom of criticism and expression because they are engaged in religious sanctities. That's right. Islam is sanctified. So to criticize Islam, you are criticizing something sanctified. Well, no. Islam is not a religion. Okay? Let's get that one cleared up right away. This one I love, or I hate. I can't decide. Separation of religion from the state and legal and educational system. Simple. Shut it down. It's so easy. Get religion out of the government, get religion out of our public schools, and get it out of our legal system. No more Sharia, quote-unquote, family courts for you. See, it's so simple. And we can do it with a stroke of a pen. We can just say, no, it's not happening here. It's not happening now. It will never happen again. Get the separation of religion from the state and legal and educational system. And you know what? We have to enforce that. You know why? Because Islam has crept its way in and has insisted on being part of the state and legal and educational system. I never had a problem with the Lord's Prayer and singing the national anthem and God Save the Queen. In Canada, when I was a child, when I was in the public school system, you know what we did? We arrived at our home room, and our teacher would take roll call, and then we would all stand up, and we would recite the Lord's Prayer and sing, O Canada, and God Save the Queen. As you know, Canada is a sovereign of the UK. That does not bother me. We lost that, though. We lost the true meaning of what it means to be a Christian, a Judeo-Christian, in our institutions. now things have become much more complicated. And it breaks my heart that we have to prohibit our religious beliefs. You know, they're infused. They're infused in our institutions. They're not intertwined, but they are infused. But we went about it quietly and peacefully. But now we're dealing with an entity called political Islam. And they want the same rights in that they shut down our schools on Friday afternoons and turn our cafeterias into mosqueterias. So now we have to get rid of that. It breaks my bloody heart. What about abolition of all restrictive and repressive cultural and religious customs, which hinder and contradict women's independence, free will, and equality? Prohibition of the segregation of sexes. Absolutely. Hello? Have you visited a mosque lately? Do you want to? Do you know what goes on in those mosques? Women at the back. Men at the front. Yeah. So they want prohibition of religious customs, rules, ceremonies, or activities that are incompatible with or infringe on people's rights and freedoms, and they want abolition of all restrictive and repressive cultural and religious customs which hinder and contradict women's independence, free will, and equality. And they want a prohibition of the segregation of the sexes. And just to remind you that I am reading to you the manifesto of the Council of Ex-Muslims of Britain, well, how are we going to do that? Very easy. It's so easy, even a child can do it. One swift swipe. You know how you do it? You declare Islam. A political entity. And outlaw it. Boom. Done. How easy was that? Yeah. Not quite so easy, isn't it? Yeah. You know why it's not that easy? It's because we're dealing with ignorance and dimitude. We have to, our countries, our Western countries are formulated around a policy. And who makes the policy? Are our politicians. Our politicians make policy, whether it be in the United States via the House, the Senate, whether it be in Canada or the UK via the House of Commons. They create the policy. They put forth the private members' bills. And you know what? When they put forth a private member's bill. And if it goes against the sensitivity grain, they get shot down. It's a career killer. I remember when Mitt Romney in the United States, for example, when he was running for the presidency, which was his to gain, and he lost it all. He said that he would never, ever appoint a Muslim into his cabinet. And guess what? That killed him. But you know what? It is real easy. Because we are the people. We're the grassroots. We're the grassroots, and we can deal with this. And we can be a pressure group. We have the Tea Party in the United States. We have the Jewish Defense League in Canada. We have the English Defense League in the UK. See, what we need are voices and more voices. It is so easy. We have to hoist up grassroots politicians that are willing to stand up and say, I have had enough of these whiners and the complainers and those who want to mold my country into an image of theirs. Those who come over here and bring their baggage and set up shop and get away with it and get state funding, federal funding, provincial funding. I want to change that. That's what we need. See, it is so easy. All you have to do is a bully, a politician, somebody from the heart. Like, not a politician, not a lifer. No, nobody like that. You just have to bully somebody that will stand up and say, I am going to Washington. Mr. Smith goes to Washington. We need an everyday man and woman. Not these bloody bastards that are ivory, you know, living in the ivory tower and have been fed off a silver spoon. No. We need people. We need people that are poor, that have nothing behind them but their good name. And it's up to you and me to back them up and ensure that they get to Washington in the United States. We ensure that they get to Parliament Hill in Ottawa in Canada. And we sure as hell make sure that they make it to Downing Street in the UK. We need good people, good names, with nothing but an ideology that says, this is my country. This matters to me. And they understand the threat called Islam. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm giving you homework. Find that representative, okay? Because if we don't, we're lost. Do you realize that Islam is like, they're like bats, okay? They're bats. And don't get me wrong, and my apologies to bats, because I actually like that. I like sitting on my back porch in the summertime and seeing the bats, you know, flying around and eating the pesky mosquitoes. But they are, they're worse. They're better. They're bad. They're nothing. They're nefarious. They fly about. And they swoop in. And we're the mosquitoes. If they are swooping in so easily, and they eat us alive, what is that for our children? What are we leaving for our legacy? I really do implore you that you find a candidate, find a grassroots candidate, whether he or she be an independent, I don't care. Just find somebody that will march to Washington and say, Islam is out. Islam is a political entity, and this is going to be part of my platform in the next election. If it's a career killer, at least we can say that he was an honorable person. He or she was an honorable person. I'm going to play a clip for you right now. And let me bring it up if I can find it. I share the studio with so many people. Oh, boy. Where did it go? Oh, no doubt I lost it. But that's okay. You know what? Before I play that clip, I do have somebody here with whom I want to speak with. And this is Matt for America. And hi, Matt. It is so great to speak with you. How are you tonight?
I'm great. It's been a while since I've called in. I needed to touch base. And,
I know.
It's been too long. How have you been doing?
I've been doing well. Very, very busy. Very busy, as usual. You know, rust never sleeps around here.
Right. It's funny how, you know, every time you wake up and you turn your head, something always pops up to get you engaged in more and more, you know, activity in some way, shape, or form, especially when dealing with this radio show. And what's happening, you know, I listened to your opening monologue there. And, you know, it's really disheartening when, you know, you're talking about serious issues like Islam creeping into the Americas here and a blind eye being, you know, cast towards Islam and the major issues. Just everybody ignores it, or they try to explain it away as you know, some type of different sect of Islam, you know, radical Islam, they're calling it. It's not radical Islam, it's Islam. We all know that. And yet we're willing to make sure that a rancher in Arizona, a guy who didn't pay $1 million in taxes, we're willing to make sure that we have militarized police down there. And we've seen this time and time again in the country. But we're willing to make sure that this guy suffers. This American citizen who entered into a contract with the federal government and the federal government broke their part of the contract. But this guy decided that he was going to stop paying taxes because of that. But we're going to go after him and make this the big story, make him the enemy, instead of looking at the real issues in the United States and Canada, which is the encroachment.
Yeah.
And it used to be a slow encroachment, but it's getting worse, and it's moving faster, and it is called Islam. Not radical Islam. It's called Islam. This is a sad state of affairs that we're in right now, and it's really disgusting.
What I think is really disgusting is what's going on in the United States, and in particular, that Nevada rancher who is under siege, and that's the way I see it, and that he is being, Cliven Bundy, ladies and gentlemen, is with whom we're referring. And I find it rather abhorrent that he is being treated this way. I know that there are some dissenting issues in that they're saying that, well, he did not pay his, grazing fees. But he's had that land. His family has had that land for over 100 years. If it's longer, people in the chat room, please correct me. But Cliven Bundy has been under siege in that he was doing nothing wrong. He was following the protocol. And what I find particularly abhorrent is that the government came along and somebody made a sweet deal with the Chinese government in that, well, don't worry, we're going to get this guy off the land. And I believe that was Alex Jones. I'm not too, well, actually, Alex Jones reported on it, and I'm not a huge fan of his, but at least he reported it. But there was a deal with the devil made with an overseas entity, and that they were going to set up solar panels.
Yeah, there was some type of an issue, and it did deal directly with Harry Reid, as a matter of fact. That dealt with either sales
Harry
of land.
Reed, that's, yeah.
It either dealt with sales of land or being able to lease parts of the land out to foreign entities to do with what they please. So yeah, there was some other issues going on involved with this Clive Bundy thing. And the thing that drives me crazy, and it goes with the American right as well, is they're running away. You were talking earlier about those grassroots people that we need to back, and we need to get them to go to Washington and make things happen. Well, you know what? We've done that. In people like Ted Cruz or what's the other big guy? I can't think of his name. Wow, my brain just went to soup right now. But we have elected people that have gone there, and they've represented Tea Party ideals, and they are not standing up for Ted Bundy in any way, shape, or form. As a matter of fact, they're Rand Paul. That's who I was thinking of. They're
Rand
attacking.
Paul. Yeah.
Right. They are running away from this.
Yeah, that's the son of Ron Paul, right?
Yes. Yes, it is. But they're running away from this because, and they're using the thing saying, well, Clive Bundy did break the law and he didn't pay his taxes. You know what? That's true. Okay, I'll take that. But why are we allowing a private American citizen who didn't pay his taxes to stand up to the American government, who didn't honor their part of the contract that they were part of with this land deal, with this grazing deal? Why are we attacking them when we have politicians in Washington who are known tax frauds, tax cheats, and tax evaders? Nobody's gone after them. But yet we're going to go after an American citizen, a guy who's working his fingers to the bone and doing the American government's job by fixing the fences that on the land that is in question. He is replanting the grass seed. He is going and taking care of the grounds there. That's something the government was supposed to do. That's why he stopped paying his taxes. So it's a cause and effect thing. What was the cause and what was the effect? And why is the American right, other than political expedience, why are they running away from the subject? In my mind, when you say, and it's true, look for the grassroots people, we keep electing grassroots people or we keep pushing grassroots people, and they're doing the same thing the Republicans are right now. So I don't know what to do.
I don't know what to do either at this point because I always say that as the United States goes, so does the rest of us. And when we do find grassroots people, and they come forth, they get shot down. They get shot in the knees and they're disabled. This is why I'm trying to explain to people that, you know, it actually is very, very easy to dismantle this the Islamic scourge in particular. As you know, Matt, this is my forte. This is what I talk about. Or, well, forte, the United States, fort, English. I'm Canadian, so I'm caught
right
between the two. But it is absolutely a valid concern in that we do not know where we can go with this because, you know, like Mitt Romney, I mentioned. Like, what do we do when politicians are honest and they're presenting their platform and they're saying that, well, I won't have a Muslim in my cabinet? Well, boy, there's a career breaker right there. And then we had the same issue here in Canada about 4 years ago when we were having our provincial elections. And we had a very, very promising outcome if we had stayed on script. And I'm going to say stay on script because we were going right along very fine. And then John Tory, the leader of the Conservative Party of Ontario, decided 2 weeks before we went to the voting booth that he was going to allow, well, not allow, but he was going to put forth a bill in that all religious schools would be funded. Well, of course, that sort of thing just messes the voter up, and nobody knew what to make of it. But I am wrapping this up in a shiny little bow. What I'm saying, though, is that we have people out there, and they say this, and they do things, but we do not have the true grassroots. In the United States, you're dealing with a rhino party at this point, and I don't know what's going to happen in your by-election in November of this year.
Well, I think the Republicans are going to dominate both houses of Congress, but that's not necessarily good news for us conservatives, because to find a conservative in the Republican Party is almost, you might as well walk into a Democratic house and look for one there. So it's really, you know, a scary issue. And I'm not one for a, you know, when I say, you know, and I believe me, I believe that the Islamic problem in America and the things that we're allowing people to do through, you know, integration into either America or Canada, the people that we're allowing in here, we're not being true to our founding. We're just not. We're just allowing them to do as they please, to dictate whatever they wish to dictate in the means of political expedience, and it's now become commonplace to allow this political entity of you know, it's like a big giant domino, you know, it all blends in together. The Clive Bundy thing in Nevada and paying more attention to that and getting people's attention on that. And demeaning the Tea Party people or the people that went down there to defend him and ignoring our, you know, major problems like our Islamic issues, the things going on in Washington right now with their these bills being passed to, you know, allow people into the it's crazy. It is literally out of control. And it's
absolutely terrifying. It's terrifying. We're living in dangerous times. And Matt, I'm going to play a clip in a moment. And please, if you like, please feel free to stay with me, and we'll continue this. But before I play this clip, I want your opinion about how you feel about Islam infiltrating not only our public schools, but our private schools and our government.
Oh, I'll absolutely stick around. Did you find the clip?
I did. Do you want to stay? Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a very much a fascinating clip. It's 6 minutes long, but believe me, it is worth your 6 minutes. This is a clip by apostates, and we'll play it right now.
Number one, my reason for leaving Islam is very simple. I read the Quran using a little logic. The Noah's Ark that is recorded in the Quran is one of the most bizarre stories I've ever heard. Noah had, it seems, the ability to communicate with animals to ask them to come aboard his ship so that their species would not become extinct. Back then, the early Arabs looked around themselves and they saw a few camels and a couple of dogs and they thought that these were all the animals in the world. They were unaware of the fact that there are over a billion species in the world and some that have not even been discovered yet. What about the animals that didn't live in Arabia? Did Noah fly on a winged horse like Muhammad to go and collect the animals from all around the world? What about the species that we're unable to see without a microscope? How did Noah collect them? This was enough for me to realize that the Quran is just a book of fables. I was astonished at the fact that the Quran mentions nothing about punishment for rape. The word rape is not even mentioned once in the Quran, as if it were not worth bringing up. Apparently, Allah thought it worthwhile to insist to his prophet the necessity for praying and paying alms over 1,000 times, but rape is not worth mentioning. What I've done for the last 6 months on the internet is debate with Muslims and try to show them the light of truth. When you debate with a Muslim and he doesn't know what to say, he always says, God is the author of the Quran because that's what it says in the Quran. It's absurd to prove something by itself. Second quote. I'm a 30-year-old male who was born in Pakistan but moved to the West with my family when I was 5. I was forced to attend religious training with ignorant and cruel mullahs. I developed a deep-seated fear of God and of not obeying his law. I made friends of all races and religions and had to reconcile that with the fascist absolutist doctrines of Islam. So I created a mental schizophrenia. In my heart, I always felt that the inequality of women was wrong, that non-Muslims were just as equal and human as Muslims, that science provided much more reasonable explanation of the world than the myths of Islam ever did. But I was too paralyzed by fear and by not wanting to upset my family, so I never said anything. Then puberty hit. When I realized I was attracted to boys and fell in love with them instead of girls, I had an extremely difficult crisis of the soul. I knew the extreme contempt that Islam had for homosexuality, and I felt that I would suffer the torments of hell for feeling the way I did. I tried committing suicide in college, but was saved by a friend, and that was the turning point. I decided that I was no longer going to be a slave to a barbaric fascist, sexist, homophobic, totalitarian, obscurantist, cultist, joyless, loveless, fear-mongering, horrible, horrible, horrible ideology. Today, free of Islam and religion, I feel more liberated and powerful, and in control of my life than I could ever imagine. I've created a family for myself based on people who share my values and who accept and love me for who I am. I wish all Muslims around the world would have the same opportunities to unchain themselves from the lies they're brainwashed into believing. I realize I'm very privileged in the West where I have the freedom to choose my life's path. Quote number 3. I'm a woman who was born in a supposedly liberal Muslim state. However, I learned at a young age that in any Muslim country, women do not count for much. I was told that men were smarter, better, and stronger than women. When I was married, my husband continued to try to reinforce male superiority over me. He continually told me that he was the boss, and I was to do what he told me to do. He reminded me that if I wanted to leave the country, I had to have written permission from him. My mother-in-law was forced to be a slave of my father-in-law. He would stay out all night at cafes, laughing with his friends and soliciting prostitutes. My mother-in-law was suffering from ill health, but she was scared to leave the house to go to see a doctor without permission from her husband. Her husband would always deny permission, so that he wouldn't have to pay the doctor the money he wanted to use on entertainment. I started to refuse to wear hijab, and my husband's beatings didn't change my mind. Then I read the Quran for the first time critically. It was a disgusting book full of hatred and intolerance. When my husband and I immigrated to the United States, I bought a copy of Ibn Warraq's Why I Am Not a Muslim. As I read the book, I felt like I was being liberated. Quote number 4. I grew up a Muslim, but I always had my doubts about the whole thing. As I grew older, I started to look at religion as a social phenomenon. Now there's no doubt in my mind that Judaism, Christianity, and Islam are all man-made. However, I found the Islamic message to be particularly disturbing. mainly because it requires at its core suppression and persecution of all those who oppose it. And the final quote, "I could not remain a Muslim because Islam hates women. I think I always knew this, but as I got older, that knowledge became more acute. Islam wants women to cover themselves, to stay indoors, to obey men, however stupid those men are. Islam says that women are inferior in every way. Islam distorted my father's feelings. He didn't want us, his own daughters, to be happy or fulfilled. He only wanted us to be good Muslims, and for daughters this means to be suffering Muslims. What sort of religion forces fathers to make their daughters suffer? What sort of father thinks that his daughter's hair is shameful? What sort of father tells her she cannot sing and dance when she's happy? A Muslim father. This is why I'm not a Muslim. My children, boys and girls, will be able to feel the wind in their hair. They will not be ashamed. They can sing and dance as much as they like. Nothing they do will shame me, as long as it's done with life and joy. Islam has no joy. Islam is a cult of tears and death."
And isn't that sad? That last sentence. Islam is nothing but a cult of fear and death. And welcome back, everybody. And you're listening to the Red Fox Blogger. I'm Kel Fritzy. Matt for America is joining me on the line, and I'm so appreciative of that. I want to thank people that are joining me in my chat room, and some had to leave because our shows overlap. We're so popular. But I want to thank Holger and Agador for being here, and I really want to thank A12 Iggy Mom, my mom. I want to thank Doc. I want to thank Jeff of the English Defense League. I want to thank, of course, Getting for Freedom, and that's my Anna from Spain. I want to thank Paul Alexander. Southern Sense is Conservative Sense, and that's my Annie. And I want to thank Zach Paisley. You guys really do take your time out of your otherwise busy day to spend it with mine. So I appreciate that very, very much. But Matt, when you hear things like that, does it give you concern about the infiltration of Islam within the United States in particular? Or, you know, like I'm here in Canada, and my co-host, Tim Burton, we're on Radio Jihad Network on Tuesday. When he hears things like that, does it concern you that these videos have to be put out and to the point where these people who are speaking out have a fatwa put on their heads?
Well, it's... Listen, there's been instances in the United States where Islam trials in the name of the religion has been allowed to go forward the way that they push Sharia law. We've had instances of where they've actually held trials of however that works with Sharia, and it's been allowed to go forward, and those punishments were allowed to be carried out. Now, I don't think any of those ended in death yet, but because of the religion, they allowed that Sharia to go forward and happen in the United States. So of course it's concerning. When I talk to people about, when they try to tell me that this is a religion of peace, and George Bush used to preach this too, and this is something I wanted to slap him about several times. But when they talk about a religion of peace, when one reads the Quran gives permission for the Muslim or the mortal man to take the life of another man if there is a disagreement with the religion of Islam. It's in the Quran. It gives permission. Let me say it again. It gives permission for man to take the life of another man for not believing. That is concerning, at the least. And yes, it's everything that, you know, when people come out of Islam, when they, you know, it's mostly women, because they're scared to speak out. It's like being a kid being involved in a family of child molesters or you know, a kid who's been raped, where they've been told, if you say anything, we're going to kill your parents. Okay, that's what these women think coming out of Islam. So it takes them a while. But, man, when they come out of Islam and they say, this is what's going on, and nobody pays attention to it, that's what you call asking for your future. It's scary.
Exactly. And I have quite the vested interest in American politics. I'm not well-versed as an American, although I've been told as a Canadian, I know more about American politics than most Americans.
Yes, ma'am, you do.
I think that's quite a lofty compliment. But one thing that concerns me is that when we have our politicians and they're entering office and they're not swearing on the Bible. Now, I'm sorry, but Christian, I believe that when you take an oath, you swear on the Holy Book, because our Holy Book, and that is because that we follow the Golden Rule. We follow the Golden Rule, which is, do unto others as you would have done unto you. And when I found out that Keith Ellison was sworn into office on a Koran under the Obama administration watch, I was just about ready to roll up and, you know, go into a corner and cry for a few days, because I'm telling you, Matt, like, this is not right. The Koran is so full of evil. It's evil, and it's so full of lies and abrogations. And when Keith Ellison was sworn in on a Koran, and Matt, please don't get me started about that particular Koran. Apparently, that was Thomas Jefferson's Koran. Oh,
yes, ma'am.
Oh, don't even take me down that road.
And you know what? They defended it as it being Thomas Jefferson's Koran, which it was Thomas Jefferson's Koran. But what they never
said,
what they never looked at it, is what Thomas Jefferson wrote in that Koran. And to sum it all up, he had a Koran to study it. He learned about cultures. He learned about world politics. That's what Thomas Jefferson did. It's what a lot of our founding fathers did. They learned about the world around them. And that's what Thomas Jefferson did. Unfortunately for Keith Ellison and anybody who gave faith in him or thought that he was swearing on the Koran, because the Koran is a religion of peace, they didn't bother to research what Thomas Jefferson put in his copy of the Koran. And that was, and I'll sum it up, it's an evil religion. He had notes all over the place saying, this is wrong, this is wrong, this isn't right, this is evil, this is just insane. His notes in the Koran were nothing but putting down and demonizing Islam. That's what Thomas Jefferson's Koran had in it.
Exactly. Because he wanted to understand exactly what the hell was going on with the Barbary pirates, for one, interfering with his shipping lanes, and why they were hijacking his ships. And he got the English version of the Koran and studied it and said, what the hell is this? And he actually got an envoy that was residing in the United States. And Thomas Jefferson said, hey, I want to have a word with you. Can you come over here and have a dinner with me? And the envoy said, yeah, but can we do it after sunset? And Thomas Jefferson thought that, oh, maybe, you know, his schedule is a little busy. And I'm being a little flippant here, folks, but, you know, stick with me. And so Thomas Jefferson moved the dinner up. And Melly Melly came over. And they had to sit down, and Thomas Jefferson looked at him and said, why are you hijacking my ships in the shipping lanes? And Melly Melly said, it's because that's how we are. We're Muslims. And Thomas Jefferson had no idea about Ramadan. He did not realize that this particular envoy was celebrating Ramadan. I call it Ramadan a ding dong. But Barack Hussein Obama had the audacity to say that, hey, and look at Thomas Jefferson hosted the first iftar dinner. That just made me throw up. Rewriting history.
You know, it kills me. I have a lot of leftist friends, okay? And I say leftist because I don't like using the word liberal. The word liberal throughout basically most of the planet means conservative. So I don't like to use the word liberal. I use leftist. But I talk to them about Obama's about his Christianity and what he preaches to be. He preaches to be Christian. He went to a Christian church and all this. Blah, 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 blah. I tell them, I go, are you – it's not even his past. Read his books. That'll tell you that he's a follower of Islam. You could just look at his present history and what he's done, who he's talked to, and what he's – when you look at the holidays that he recognizes publicly with a heartfelt speech, not one of them are Christian. But I've seen him give some heartfelt speeches about Islamic holidays – and give some heartfelt speeches about the plight of the Islamist. But when it comes to Christianity, no, that's all American politics right there.
I think that, he really does play into the Islamic policy.
Well, no, it's not that he really does. It's not even a question. It really isn't. The man is an Islamist. Every move he makes overseas, when it comes to any foreign issue, he's all. Look at Libya. Let's just look at Libya for a second. The man was supposed to bring all of the soldiers out of Iraq.
God.
He's supposed to bring everybody out of Afghanistan. But what does he do? He spearheads. Yeah, we didn't put boots on the ground, but he spearheads to go into Libya out of nowhere. No, this came out of absolutely nowhere. Not saying that that Libya was in any way, shape, or form a great nation, or Muammar Gaddafi was an angel, which he wasn't. But out of nowhere, he goes into Libya. Why? Let's look at the Muslim Brotherhood. Who has control of Libya right now? I said that when he was going in there. During that spearheaded campaign of Obama starting to throw Tomahawk missiles and going to the UN and actually writing out the battle plan for the United Nations going into Libya, I said that the reason he's going in is so the Muslim Brotherhood can take control. Guess who was right? Am I a genius? No. I just know the man. I've read his books. I've seen what he's done in recent history. He wanted the Muslim Brotherhood in control. He had some contract with them, and that's what happened.
Well, you know what? And Muammar Gaddafi was actually following. There were rules laid down, and Libya was following those rules. Like, yeah, you're right. You're right, Matt, that Muammar Gaddafi was quite a tyrant, but he was actually behaving himself on the world stage in the end days of his presidency.
Yep.
And Obama went in there, and Obama's minions went in there, and they took him out. Now, the one thing that scares me is that Libya was a gatekeeper. Like, one of the agreements that Muammar said is that, okay, I'm going to back off on my militancy in the West, but one thing you have to do for me, leave me alone to run my country. And so the UN said, okay, fine. And what he did is that he stopped mass Islamic immigration from North Africa. They would travel through Libya and Muammar Gaddafi, he would stop them at the gates and turn them back. He's gone now, and now the mass immigration is unfettered, and Europe is being overrun with North Africans, Somalis in particular. And it's just a terrible, terrible mess. It's like Camp of the Saints coming true.
It was a plan. You're absolutely right. That's exactly what it was. Muammar Gaddafi was obeying international law. And you're right about what he was doing as far as having any type of a terrorist group going through his country, any type of Islamic immigration. You're absolutely right. Another thing is, and I'm not trying to put Gaddafi on a pedestal here, but when 9/11 happened, Gaddafi he extended his hand in friendship and gave his remorses. He said that it was an awful act when that happened. And again, the man is a tyrant, but he was under control. Once Ronald Reagan dropped a couple tomahawks through a window and killed his family, he basically said, "I'm not screwing with America anymore." He was done.
Absolutely.
Reagan taught his ass a lesson.
Absolutely. And that is exactly how this scenario went down. And it turned into, well, it's the devil we know. And what's in Libya now? Like the Muslim Brotherhood. And,
and that was the plan.
I don't even know who the hell is in there anymore.
That was the plan.
And
I'm sorry. Barack Obama is trying. I'm sorry. Go ahead, dear.
Yep. No, Matt. I was just going to wrap it up and say, wrap up my point and say that we don't even know what the hell is in Libya these days. And believe me, Egypt is hanging on by the skin of her teeth. They thought that they were going to have a savior Mubarak. What really shocked me about Egypt in particular, and I'll get to that, is that when Obama was elected, he went over there to deliver his speech, and he decided that he was going to have the Muslim Brotherhood sit front stage and center. Mubarak Hussein Mubarak, he just sat back in his chair and just about fainted. Like, it is unbelievable what Barack Hussein Obama has done. It is, he's dismantled everything.
On purpose, in the name of Islam. I'm sorry. I know there's some people who, they go crazy when I say that. But in the name of Islam, Barack Hussein Obama is acting accordingly. And that's where we stand.
Do you think he's a Trojan horse?
It depends on what you mean, because there's so many sides to that Trojan horse. Is he disguising himself as an American? That's crazy because he appeals to so many different types. Unfortunately, let me give you an example. He appeals to progressives, even though he has no belief in the progressive cause. He does, but it's doing it in the name of Islam. He has appealed to Democrats, and the Democrat, there's a difference between a Democrat and a progressive. At least there used to be. Now they're kind of one and the same because the progressives have taken over the party. He appeals to some Republicans. So it depends on what you mean by a Trojan horse. What exactly is he representing is the key. He's not representing an American, at least the American as America was founded. So that's kind of a difficult question.
It's very, very difficult. It's like a Rubik's Cube. You could twist it and turn it and try to get all the squares aligned, and it'll take you forever, Matt. But you know what? We have another caller here, and I know who this is, and I want to bring him on right now. And hi, 4707.
Hey, Kel, how you doing? This is Moving.
How you doing, Agador?
Agador? No, this is Moving.
Oh, it's Moving. I'm sorry. You guys have the same area code. Oh my goodness, I'm so terrible. I don't
okay.
like to give out the area codes when I bring people on. I just use the last four digits. But oh, Moving. So what do you
no
think?
No worries.
What
hey,
do
so
you
you're
think about
about
what you've been hearing?
You're talking about our commander in thief over here in the United States. Barack, insane Obama, and it seems
yeah.
like, you know, you were talking about Libya, which it compelled me to call. This Benghazi thing, I still don't get it. I still don't understand why there's been no accountability for Benghazi. And, hey, I'm just a citizen asking legitimate question. No accountability for Benghazi. And the president and secretary of state got up there and lied and said it was a video that enraged the Islamic world, when in actuality, it wasn't. No accountability, and our Congress and our Senate did nothing. The American people did nothing. And it just, you know, it smells so bad. So that's what I have to say on Libya, and I'm really looking for that Benghazi accountability. We do have a four dead Americans.
Same
and
here.
Then some. And then some. And nobody cares. That's kind of sad.
Mm. What so. I'm really wondering is there's a lot of people out there saying that it would be very interesting if Hillary Clinton was running for the presidency, and that is a high likability. If it weren't for if it weren't for Benghazi, she would probably win the vote to run for the Democratic Party. But Benghazi is an albatross around her neck. But on the other hand, there's a lot of people saying that, we're just going to let that one go by the wayside. And that frightens me more than the uninformed voter.
Yeah, well, I know the reason that Hillary Clinton is not going to run.
Please share.
Health issues.
Because the warranty on her broomstick is worn out. That's why. So, I just got to put a little light in there sometimes. So, hey, but
oh,
I just wanted
I
to call in with a few and, thanks for letting me call in. And thanks for pushing my buttons tonight about Libya once again. Take care.
Oh, Moving. Thank you so very much. And moving forward, phone into my Monday show with Tim Burton and myself and answer a trivia question and win a mug. But Matt, that is so damn true. Is that Hillary Clinton, she may very well take the Democratic ticket for 2016. That scares me.
The woman, the Benghazi thing with Hillary, as far as if you're a Democrat voter or a leftist voter, Benghazi has no effect on you. It doesn't register. You don't care. Unfortunately, it's because we've seen Hillary lie before. Let's remember, this is a woman who said that she had landed in Afghanistan, and I forgot it. I think this is when she was running for president the first time.
Oh, yeah. She was under fire.
Under fire, right. And they were ducking and running for their lives, and that turned out to be a complete lie. And then she came up with some fabricated story, and that's a pretty big lie. When you're saying you were being shot at, getting off out. I would think that I'm sorry, she used the excuse, I misremembered. Remember that word?
I misremembered.
How do you misremember either getting shot at or not getting shot at.
That's
how
not
do
even
you misremember
proper
that?
Grammar.
It's the worst word ever invented, and it was invented by the left, of course. But she misremembered that, so somehow she misremembered being shot at. And so I saw down the line that there were going to be bigger lies because she was let off the hook. So I don't think Benghazi is going to be any sort of a major challenge to her presidential run should she decide to run.
Yeah.
I'm not really sure where Hillary's at right now.
I don't think anybody knows where Hillary is at right now. I don't think Hillary knows where Hillary is at this point right now.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what's – oh, God. Oh. What is terrifying me is that she's going to have some sort of Eric Holder as a running mate. I don't know. And you know what, though?
That hurt. That hurt.
But, oh, I'm sorry, baby. I didn't mean to do that.
Eric Holder is a running... I hadn't even considered that yet. That
yep, the hurt. Attorney General. The ill Attorney General. Yeah, well, actually, I don't think we're going to be seeing him being active in politics anytime soon because he did recuse himself due to a health issue. He was rushed to the hospital with a heart murmur or something there about a month ago.
Holder was?
Yeah.
I don't, you know what, I in the last month and a half or so, I kind of gave politics a rest for a little while, so that may be true, and I missed it, and whatever. Good. If that's true, I hate to sound horrible, but good.
Yeah, I think he went to the hospital because he had an issue with his, I don't know what it was. He had a health issue, and I wish I could bring it up in my screen, and my computer is deciding to freeze on me. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take a break, ladies and gentlemen, and Matt, you are more than welcome to stay with me, and I'm going to wrap up this show in a few moments after this song break, and we'll see everybody back here in 4 minutes.
Living this way.
And hey, everybody, and welcome back, and thank you for your patience. My screens were freezing up very, very terribly, and maybe it doesn't help when you're conducting a live show and you have like 8 pages open. That might have a little bit to do with it. So I shut down, you know, a whole bunch of pages. But we're back and everything is good. It's all gravy. And I really want to thank Matt for America sitting with me tonight. I sent you that link, Matt, about Attorney General Eric Holder hospitalized briefly. And I'm thinking that when I come across these stories, I think that they are looking for an outer, because even they, they're rats that are leaving a sinking ship, and that is called the Obama administration.
I would agree with that. Now that I'm looking at it, it does kind of ring a bell. And I believe that, as usual, something came up in the middle. It's like Hillary when she had that problem. What the hell was it? She passed out or something like that. When it came to when she was having the Benghazi hearing, as a matter of fact, you remember she had an issue where she passed out. And so it's the same thing. It's like, oh, I, you know, feel bad for me. I think that it's probably the same. He may have had a problem. I don't wish health issues on anybody, you know. But I think that health issues are used by the left, by the Democrat Party now, to try to get away or get around an issue to make them look good or at least take the heat off. And it might have been what it was. I hope he doesn't have any major problems. But you know what? If you do, pal, that's God telling you something.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, Hillary Clinton, she should be sitting in a jail cell right beside Barack Hussein Obama. You know, there's 4 reasons why not to vote for Hillary Clinton in 2016. If she does obtain the Democratic ticket. There's 4 reasons, folks. It's called Chris Stevens, Sean Smith, Glenn Doherty, and Tyrone Woods. So don't let Benghazi go. I am imploring my American cousins to keep that in mind. Don't be an uninformed voter. Don't be duped into some sort of fantasy land that the liberals like to spin for you, because what they'll do is they'll take you down a garden path, and you'll get to the end of that garden path, and you'll find that you are wallowing in a swamp.
Yeah, it's the hope of the free world that we need to worry about. You know, something like what happened in Benghazi is, listen, America has been the leader of the free world, of really the world, for the last 30 years, 40 years at least. And I'm not saying it's the most, you know, it's not the greatest nation, it's not the godliest nation. We've had our issues, and it really is. But when it comes, America has been who all these other nations have gathered around, and we've formed this freedom-loving planet that goes forward. And Benghazi, for something to happen like that, it doesn't matter if it was Canadian, if it was Australian, if it was UK, it's awful. It's awful to allow that to happen without any backlash, without the people being responsible to be held responsible. And that's what Benghazi represents. It's the freedom being taken away by people that want a global government, which Barack Hussein Obama does and his administration does, and the whole progressive movement, which is more than just America. That shoots throughout the world. The whole progressive movement is responsible for Benghazi, and it needs to be stopped.
Oh, it does, and it's got to be stopped in its tracks right bloody now, because this is an atrocity that Well, I'm not letting go of that. I have interviewed people in the United States about Benghazi in particular. I've talked with Wild Bill for America. He's been on my show. I've talked to Dr. Bill Warner. Tim and myself, we've interviewed Pamela Geller and Robert Spencer. And it all comes down to one common denominator. Their denial. They will not come clean with Benghazi. And they are engaging in dimitude. Like, whose palms are they greasing? And who's greasing their palms?
Well, it's all about, really, when you look at the root of why all these things are happening, and I'm not saying that Obama is the leader of the major power that's behind all of this, because I think Obama is an Islamist. I think he's for Islamist ideals. However, in the end, when it comes to true world power, with, you know, the United Nations and the League of Nations back in the 20s, they were for a certain world power to take place, a progressive movement.
Yeah.
That's where the power is. Obama's going to get screwed in the end. If all of these progressive ideals happen, Obama and his the Middle East has nothing to not, they're not going to have any power whatsoever. This has to do with Agenda 21, which Obama is a backer of, Clinton is a backer of, and it's all about a one-world order. I got news for Obama. Being an Islamist, backing Middle East tyranny, it's not going to fly. That's not what the one-world order is about. The one-world order has nothing to do with the Middle East. He's going to come out a loser.
No.
But he thinks that these things are going to happen, and yes, having an Islamist state is going to be detrimental. It's going to cause a lot of deaths. It's going to cause a lot of harm. But all that is a tool to get to the ultimate end. And the ultimate end is a globalized one-world government that's not Islamist. It just has to do with global tyranny, in my opinion.
It absolutely does. And I was on a... I was doing the radio host on another network, and that's the Radio Jihad Network, and that's with Tim Burton and myself, and we were talking about Barack Hussein, Soweto Obama, and I was asking the people, is there a chance that this person could be impeached? I was bringing up my argument points, and I'm saying that it would be impossible to impeach a sitting president, never mind the first black president of the United States, because we would be seen as racist, although Bill Clinton apparently was the first black president.
Right.
That's neither here nor there. But Holger Awakens called in, and he said, you know what, I'm a man of principle, and when I see wrong, I take it to task, and there should be no problem in impeaching a president, whether, despite who he is and how he got there. We have an issue on our hands. This is the United States of America. This is very, very important. This president is violating every single constitutional value, and he's breaking them. He's writing executive orders left, right, and center, and he is engaging in what I would think would be usurpious acts, and that he should be impeached. And I liked what Mr. Holger Awakens had to say, in that he said that, I'm a man of principle. If I see somebody breaking the law, I'm going to arrest them, and it doesn't matter whether or not he's sitting or not sitting. Do you think that Obama will have his comeuppance down the road?
No, I don't. Because of the, I've said this before on this program before. I've said it on a lot of other programs. This country needs to suffer because there are so many people that are duped into thinking that Obama's vision or the progressive vision is the correct vision. They have no idea that this just happened in the early 1930s and 1940s. We saw it in Nazi Germany. It's a mirror image. It's a mirror image. Mirror. I mean, it's exactly the same. They don't recognize it. They don't see it. Obama will not be held to task. And they're going to go along with what he wants to do. Just because they think that there's a new way to go. You know, they think that Obama's message is brand new, and they think that it's fresh and it's bold. And what they don't understand, because they don't know how to study history, and they don't see that this has been done before and that it failed miserably and that it killed millions of people, for that reason, they need to suffer. So, no, Barack Obama will not be held accountable in any way, shape, or form. When you're talking about constitutionality and how much he has stepped all over the Constitution and how much the left, the American left, has stepped all over the Constitution of the United States, one just needs to go back to Nixon and see what Nixon did to almost face impeachment to the point where he resigned. That was two or three people that broke into a building. That's all that was about.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
But yet we're seeing, you know, I don't even know how to compare the difference between Nixon and Obama right now. And we're seeing Obama just get away with whatever. That is the way America views itself right now. They have no idea what's going on. They're more willing to pay attention to Honey Boo Boo, to the Orange County housewives, to everybody else.
Oh, yeah. And how much weight's that Kim Kardashian, is that how you say her name?
That's close
has
enough.
Has lost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That, and so for that, for these, and it's brilliant. It really is brilliant on the left, so they could push their agenda through. It's brilliant. It's working. What they wanted to do is happening. So America, to see truth and what's going on, they have to suffer.
That's what they're doing. They're throwing in red herrings, left, right, and center.
Right. And the only way to turn that back is for them. It's like a drunk or a drug addict. They have to hit rock bottom before they realize which way to go. They either commit suicide or they make things better, but they have to hit rock bottom to make that choice. And that's where America's at, unfortunately. I almost really want to, you guys are going to hate this, but I almost really want to push the leftist agenda as hard as possible. I almost want to back it so that it goes as fast as possible into the toilet so that we have a chance to pull ourselves out.
Absolutely. And, my dear man, I really, Matt, you have been instrumental joining me on the program tonight. We're down to our last 15 moments of talking points, and I'm going to explain to people that there's help out there when it comes to leaving Islam. But I want to give you a chance to wrap up your final talking points.
You know, I really appreciate being on the program again. You are a lovely host. You are my Canadian cousin, and I love. Believe me, I'm a big fan of the Canadians. I'm a big fan of the Australians, the UK. Anybody who's a freedom lover, I am a fan of, and you have a place in my house. That's for sure. I appreciate being on the program again. I'm sorry it's been so long, but guys.
Oh, great! Can I bring my four dogs and my six cats? I'm kidding.
You know, I have a dog story, but it takes longer than 15 minutes. You said wrap it up. I'm going to wrap it up.
So, will you promise me that you will call back in on a Friday again?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I'll be back on, and you guys just keep up the good fight. Keep pointing out the truth and keep doing what you're doing, and we'll make this thing turn around. Absolutely.
Oh, Matt, we absolutely will. Thank you so very much for being here tonight. You're a godsend, believe me.
Thank you very much.
Weekend.
So are you. You too. Take care, guys.
Okay. Thanks, Matt. And ladies and gentlemen, that was Matt for America joining us tonight on the Red Fox Blogger. I really appreciate, you know, the time that you folks spend with me. I'm just a humble little voice, but you know what? Voices like Matt make them boom louder. And we have been talking about how to get rid of Islam, and it is so easy. And I want to apprise listeners that may be listening on archive devices later on, but it is so easy. There is a site out there. It is called Freedom Defense. It's Refuge from Islam. If you're thinking of leaving Islam, be wary, be careful. Now, that should scare you in itself, okay? If you're thinking of leaving Islam, be wary, be careful. Oh, for goodness sake. Do not tell your Muslim friends or family. Oh, my God. What do you have to do? You have to get your own bodyguard. God. The Quran commands your death for leaving Islam, and that is 4:9. My apologies. That is chapter 4, verse 89, which calls for the murder of renegades from the faith. Get that? Renegades. Do you believe that? And Muhammad is explicit in his hadith. If anyone changes his religion, kill him. And that is from Burqari. Many honor killings have been committed for the crimes, quote unquote, that of the Islamic faith and within the Islamic law. They are considered far less serious than leaving Islam. Like, you know, like if you honor kill your daughter, that's a far less crime than being an apostate. That's what that is saying. That's chapter 4, verse 89. Many honor killings have been committed for crimes that are in Islamic law considered far less serious than leaving Islam. Do you think you're safe in America? Do you think you're safe in Canada, the UK, Australia? No. There have been people who have been threatened with numerous times for leaving Islam. Rashid Khalifa, Rikha Berry. They were murdered by Islamic supremacists in Arizona in the early 1990s because of their heretical teachings. If you doubt that you're in danger in America, and this is a public service announcement now, folks. If you doubt that you're in danger in America, be aware that apostates have been threatened or murdered in recent years in Afghanistan, Egypt, Pakistan, Somalia, and elsewhere. And that would include the United States, Canada, Australia, the UK, Netherlands, all over Europe. Believe me, honor killings are everywhere. It doesn't matter how free or open your country's society is. The law of Islam recognizes no national borders. It's an untold number of American Muslim girls who suffer honor violence, even death, for violating the Sharia. If you can get to this site, refugee from Islam, please, please get to that site. There are many links out there that can help you. This is another step that we can take. It's so easy. It's so easy to take care of this scourge that we call Islam. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you all very much for joining me tonight. You know, I have an idea, and it is so bloody easy. Just pick up a book and read about it. Ban Islam. It's so simple, even a child could do it. I hope that you have enjoyed the program tonight, and I really, really do appreciate that I had, you know, so many people here supporting me. I find it tough sometimes to do these programs, but Matt for America made it quite easy tonight. So, Matt, I really want to thank you in particular. Ladies and gentlemen, please, if you can just spread the word. Like, it's so easy. It's so easy. We can ban Islam. No problem. Come on. All it takes is elbow grease and a voice. And spread the word, because this is the greatest threat facing the West. But on that note, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to leave you on that. I will see you back here on Monday with my co-host, Tim Burton. And we'll see you at 3 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Guys, thanks. And remember, it is massive Islamity. We have to stop the insanity. Good night, everybody.